Into sports.
20 yards out, Urs to shoot, don't shoot! Oh, what a goal for Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah.
No. Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports, ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your App Store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network. With Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural, protein-powered chicken bites.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power,
fueling the mischief in the beautiful game.
Gamble responsibly. See dunlewy.net.
Now, welcome along to the football show. So it seems Harry Kane is about to be unleashed for Spurs. 59 minutes on the clock. It is Wycombe Wanderers 1, Spurs 1 in the FA Cup this evening. Wycombe took the lead. Gareth Bale equalised on the stroke of half time, and so 30 minutes to go. Kane is on to see if he can nick a winner for Spurs. Already this evening, we have spoken to Pat Nevin about the Frank Lampard situation and events at Old Trafford. Something totally different for you now, though. We are running a Grassroots of Sport series this week, right across the Off the Ball schedule. It kicked off this morning on OTBAM. And this evening now, we're going to talk grassroots football, not least when it comes to things like talent development, dropout rates, best practice internationally versus where Ireland is. And to do so, I'm very happy to say we're joined by Dr. Laura Finnegan. Laura's a member of the Football Research Group at Waterford IT, and by Shane Keegan, a League of Ireland manager in various roles at Galway United, Wexford Youths, and currently part of the Dundalk setup. You're both very welcome. So Laura, your Football Research Group, it's looking at football right around the world in the hope of identifying best practice, really, and maybe influencing policy, I think is the gist.
Yeah, we see ourselves very much as having a domestic and an international remit. We are a collection of traditional academics, non-academics, pre-academics, a little bit of mixture of everything from across a number of fields that all have an influence on football and talent development, whether that be myself, which is more the traditional talent development area, whether it's the field of psychology. So I think we have a lot to offer, and I think it's an area that really could do with just a whole scale kind of warts and all investigation, both here in Ireland and internationally as well.
Okay, and at what point are you in the investigation? Can you give us a pretty informed view of things, or is it early days?
Well, my own PhD was based on talent development in Irish football, and that's something that I've been working on for the last 7 years.
Okay.
Officially finished that this year, so so that's good news.
Just the 7 years.
So, just 7 years part-time, yeah. Look, it was really interesting, and it took me to probably a lot of areas that I wasn't expecting when I started off. I think naively I thought that I would try and affect change. I'm a lecturer in Waterford IT, and very much the accepted practice is you go on and do a PhD. So for me to be able to combine my passion of football with research just was a really good fit for me. And yeah, the idea came really after Euros in 2012 to really try and drill down into talent development in Irish football.
Great. Well, listen.
So
there was a delay on the line. Go ahead.
That opened up a lot of routes then in terms of both looking at what we're doing, but also then looking at a longitudinal study. There was a 5-year longitudinal study where I followed 5 boys that were on the Irish under 15 team at the time, following their journey and I suppose learning from their insights as well.
Great. Well, listen, you've got a really deep understanding of where we are. And Shane, it's great to have you with us. You'll have, I'm sure, a very practical feel for where we are as well. And you're working with players right around the country. Laura, could you kick us off then? Where are we in broad terms from the, let's take talent development then as an area you've specialised in. The very talented 8-year-old, 9-year-old boys and girls in Ireland, at that age over in the UK, Premier League clubs might start sniffing around them and start developing them. And we know the avenues over there. Over here, what tends to happen?
Well, I think it depends where you live. really. There is definitely a place of birth effect in Ireland. So the opportunities and the chances that you get will differ depending on where you are. So one of my studies was looking at the Emerging Talent Programme and maybe looking at where the boys were getting opportunities to get on to that. And you were 50% more likely if there was a centre in your county to get on one of those. Then there's issues to do with maybe representative spots per head of population as well. So that's probably the first thing, that it's not an equal opportunity, I suppose, that there are different challenges for people across the country in terms of the landscape. But yeah, it is very different. But I think that's our strength as well. I mean, we have to be creative. We don't have professional academy structures from a young age. And we could look at that and think that that's automatically a bad thing. But I think we can be creative. We have to be inventive with the resources that we do have as well.
So the Emerging Talent Programme, I mean, that has come on board in the last number of years. The likes of Robbie Brady, I think, amongst others, has been through it. How successful is that? Are there enough of them? Are kids getting enough hours of contact training through them?
I think their role will probably change and evolve with the emergence of the League of Ireland underage. I think that they were really valuable, particularly for players outside of the traditional strongholds of maybe the DDSL. It did give them an extra step up in terms of training. But I think their role, that they'll go a little bit younger than they would have done traditionally, because maybe that once the 1917s and 15s came on board, they were essentially drawn from the same pool. So there still is a role to play, particularly for rolling it out maybe in areas that don't have that kind of immediate access to an underage League of Ireland team.
Okay. And are there enough programmes around the country? Could we do it a whole lot more? Or are we doing all right on that front?
I think it depends what we're talking about in terms of programmes. Are we talking
the Emerging Talent Programme?
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, there's the league structure at the minute. Every league has its Emerging Talent Programme, and then there are the regional centres. So I think that merged with hotspots in terms of League of Ireland clubs. I think it's enough, but I think a warts and all approach in terms of looking at playing populations and numbers. One of the findings from my study was that actually we could do with another centre, perhaps in Dublin, and then maybe even in the commuter belt around Dublin as well, to cater for the large volume of players.
And just a last one, and then I'll bring in Shane. For instance, just to give us a practical understanding of the Emerging Talent Programme, certainly as it was, and I appreciate your point that it may be changing slightly with the national leagues coming on board. But so say I'm a talented 10, 11, 12-year-old and I'm playing for my schoolboy team. What does being involved in an Emerging Talent Programme mean for me? How many extra sessions am I doing in a given week? Or is it even that often?
I think the way it was, the time was perhaps 26 weeks over the year, one evening a week. And then there were meetups for perhaps for a week or two during holiday times as well. So it did. It extended in terms of the longitudinal research. Definitely found it more beneficial was the players from perhaps less traditional footballing counties. They found it most beneficial.
And was there anything in place for girls? I presume we're talking boys here, or did it serve both?
That study was boys, but there is an expansion of the programme for girls happening in the near future.
Shane, where are we broad terms for you then?
Yeah, well, it's interesting when you hear Laura talk about it. So when I was initially getting involved in coaching and started on my coaching badges, the ETPs were kind of just getting into full swing, Joe. And Laura's hit the nail on the head. I mean, initially, the purpose that they served, without a doubt, they were a fantastic thing, in my opinion. As Laura has said, certainly outside of Dublin, you know, if you were in Dublin and you were a good, talented player, you'd be found. Simple as that. But we were down in, as I say, living in Laois, but my local club would have played in the Kilkenny District League. Now, I would have got coaching around our under-12s around that time, let's say, and we would have had one really, really strong player. But up until the ETP came along, Joe, you could be the best player in your club, and then, yeah, you might be brought into county trials, and then you'd be the best player maybe at your county trials, or top two, three players at your county trials. But then the gap from there to the next thing up was Irish international trials. You might never be heard of outside of Kilkenny. You really might not. You might never even be invited to an international trial. So this served as a middle ground, that now all of a sudden the best players in Kilkenny, the best players in Carlow, the best players in Waterford we're all going to Waterford once a week to train down there. And now all of a sudden, if you're one of the best players at that, well, now you were coming into international trials. So it served as a really, really brilliant middle ground in that sense. And my earliest experiences would have been bringing that talented kid down to Waterford every Monday night and getting to see him flourish and play with a higher standard player than he would have got the chance to play with if the ETPs hadn't. And by the way, the knock-on effect of that, Joe, was I was maybe what? It's the best nearly 15 years ago now, I suppose. So it is, and I'm trying to do the maths at his age. It was fantastic in that the other knock-on effect was I was getting to watch the best coaches in the region coach these talented kids. So it was a win-win, but there is no doubt it's certainly developed and changed now. Really, now you're looking at I think, Laura, correct me, but I think you're really looking at it been focused on kind of 10s, 11s, 12s, whereas back then it would have went up as far as 15s and 16s. But obviously the League of Ireland structure kind of takes care of the older boys now.
Is that where it is, Laura, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, definitely the focus is now on League of Ireland and that kind of pathway from under 13 up.
Okay. So let's talk the League of Ireland situation then. 13s, 15s, 17s, 19s and women's 17s as well. Is, as I understand it, do correct me if I'm wrong at any point on any of this. The obvious gap there is 14s, 16s and 18s, and everybody acknowledges there's a problem there. I think the FEI would acknowledge there's a problem there. So in effect, Laura, are we looking at lots of players playing National League at 13s and 15s and 17s and then having to return to their schoolboy club, for instance, at 14s and 16s and 18s? Is that the reality of how this is going to work in the short term until we get it sorted out?
It's how it is happening. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think anyone that would look at that pathway would look at it and see that it's, you know, it's not really coherent in terms of the movement of players in and out of these development pathways. And particularly you still have the Kennedy Cup in the middle of that as well, which seems to be treated differently depending on where you are in the country. There's some reports of, you know, boys choosing to stay out of League of Ireland under 13 to be able to go into Kennedy Cup. So there are issues definitely about even the consistency in the pathways. Was the under 13s was the most controversial league in terms of its inception. I think everybody acknowledged that there definitely was a place for the 19s, the 17s and perhaps the 15s as well. And again, that piece passed the 19s also.
And give or take, are we talking just the League of Ireland clubs basically playing in this National League, Laura?
Where there are areas that maybe aren't served geographically by a League of Ireland club, then there are other kind of league-based teams that have entered.
Almost representative teams of the leagues in different counties kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And do you see this as a progressive move, as the right move in a country of this size to have the best players at those ages playing in a national league like this, Laura?
I think you have to look at it from an age perspective. I think at the later teen years, I think absolutely, yes, I think there's a role for it. I think there are potential issues with the under 13 league. Again, it's in its infancy. So we are assessing it through the guise of maybe international best practice and, you know, looking at the development versus the win focus, that kind of black hole that puberty is in terms of development. Really, we don't know what's going to come out the far side. So, you know, we can't tell at 12 who the best players or the 2% maybe of players that are going to get spots on these League of Ireland teams are.
Mm. And if totally. And look, there's always going to be late developers. But I presume the player who's not picked at 11, 12, maybe even 13, 14, if he comes good at 15, 16, he'll get picked up then, I would presume.
Yeah, that's the hope. And it's about resources and it's about supporting that second tier. What we can't let happen, I suppose, is that all of our resources now are focused in this, what they'll call it, the elite level at underage. We have to think of that second level because, like, there has to be a second level where grassroots players are kept almost viable and in the system.
Yes, okay.
Because you don't know. What starts at maybe a physical maturational difference at 12 actually then turns into almost a self-fulfilling prophecy, because that player then has access to better coaching, better standards and competition and that kind of thing. So we do, I mean, if we could be guided by the philosophy of keeping as many in the pathway as possible, because really that's something that we have to do because of a country of our size.
Yeah, we can't be losing players that easily.
No.
Shane, are you in favour of this National League? I know the schoolboy clubs have been very unhappy, and DDSL clubs who've ruled the roost for a long time are watching their players going away potentially, and they don't like it for understandable reasons, but are you in favour of it?
Yeah, in terms of the talent development pathway, Joe, I am. But again, you have to take everything I say on the proviso that I'm speaking as somebody from down the country. And to me it's an absolute no-brainer. Now I'll be honest with you, you know, the FAI, I suppose, will get a lot of stick over a lot of things that haven't been done well. To me, this has been a really, really good development, and it's something I don't know if I ever thought, I ever believed it could happen, because there was so much of a stronghold politically with some of the big schoolboy clubs, and I know, look, you'll probably get texts in from big schoolboy clubs now giving out about my take on it, but. Yeah, to me, in terms of getting the best players around the country, not just those in Dublin, playing against each other on a regular basis, and it's a no-brainer to me. If you're getting the best players, training with the best players on a regular basis, playing against the best players on a regular basis, it has to lead to better player development. It really, really does. And look, you're in massive, massive competition with GEA. In most counties around the country, you really, really are. So there has to be something there for players that they don't have to drive to Dublin if they want to, you know, embark on a potential professional career. So it's been huge there. The one thing I would say, just from the structural point of view, Joe, that yourself and Laura were talking about, it would seem a no-brainer to me, and maybe there is reasons. I think the FAI are looking at it. At the moment, you've got under League of Ireland under 13, then you've got the Kenty Cup under 14, then you've got League of Ireland under 15, and there's so many complications there. To just flip the under 13 League of Ireland and the Kennedy Cup being at under 14, just bring the Kennedy Cup forward to under 13 and bring your first League of Ireland season in at under 14.
Yeah.
Now everybody plays with their local league side all the way up to Kennedy Cup. Now they go into a League of Ireland pathway at under 14, and the gap through to the following year is only 1 year, which means the physical size, the size implications don't have as much of a bearing. And by the time they're going from 15 to 17, they're kind of better able to handle that jump in physicality. You know?
Yeah, it's a great point. Very simple suggestion and makes perfect sense. I remember, so we're going back maybe 20 years ago when I'm 15, 14 years of age, and my mate was playing for Belvedere, you know, he was a brilliant player, and he'd moved from our local side to Belvedere. And at the time, Richie Ryan, who I think is from kind of Tipperary neck of the woods.
About 10 minutes out the road from me, Joe. Yeah.
Yeah, and like has gone on to have a great career, so it worked out for him. But I remember hearing that, you know, this lad's driving up to Belvo every week. I was thinking, geez. But that was where we were 20 years ago. If you wanted to be seen by scouts and you were serious about it, you had to be in the DDSL realistically. And so that's where the National League, for a Richie Ryan type who doesn't have to be trekking up and down, makes perfect sense.
You say 20 years ago, it's far more recent than that.
Is it, so
I have a 17-year-old brother who played under 12 and under 13 with Belvedere, because he felt at the time that's what he had to do.
Okay.
So that's 5 years ago, you know.
Right, okay, interesting. Okay, so that trend has continued. So National League, for those reasons, has to come in and makes total sense for the those in the areas outside of Dublin. Laura, is there any argument, and this is maybe part of that second level point you made, to almost have the DDSL, which is thriving and has got, you know, such a big population to pick from, to almost leave Dublin be and have all those teams playing against each other and let that continue to produce as it has been, and then have the National League for the rest of the country? Would that have been a good idea, bad idea? Do we know yet? What are your thoughts?
I think, again, it goes back to the age range that we're talking about, because psychologically and developmentally, an 11 and 12-year-old is very different from a 17, 18, 19-year-old. I mean, it's why we see so high dropout figures at that kind of 12 or 13 age group. Like, as soon as you start to have representative squads and teams brought into the mix, well, then suddenly there's that idea of, well, perceived competence. And suddenly, you know, my friend is getting picked for this representative team and I'm not. And at that 11 and 12, even 13, kids can't differentiate between effort, ability and practice. You know, you win, you're good, and you lose, you're bad. And there's no real more other nuance to it at all. So I think in all these conversations about you know, you mentioned the competitive structures and everything. We do have to realise that the earlier that comes in, well, the more likely we are to have dropout. And I think what's really, I suppose, counterintuitive about talent development research is that, you know, it's not necessarily an accumulation of hours. Like the concept of 10,000 hours is probably the worst thing that, that ever happened in that area. So yeah, I think as long as we have a space for people that want to participate in sport to do so. I mean, if we do look at that, the new approach that Sport New Zealand are talking about, their approach is very much trying to bust some of those myths of talent development.
Okay, so you wouldn't have a strong feeling either way then on DDSL, leave it as it is and do a national league for the rest of the country, or to include Dublin?
I wouldn't be having the travel brought in at that young age, no.
Okay, okay. So, well, talk to us more about that point then about, you know, the balance between protecting dropout rates, which is obviously pretty crucial, especially when we're talking about the numbers who aren't going to make it in the Premier League. You really want to protect dropout rates, and you really want the best kids playing against the best kids. So how do you strike that balance then? What, you know, because we do want the best kids playing against the best kids, do we, for their own development?
There's actually a lot of emerging research to show that like a mix of approaches is best. So again, the best kids, well, what do you mean by that? Well, at that early adolescence, it's probably physicality. Like quite often it's physicality masquerading or maturity masquerading as talent. So it's why, you know, being creative about biobanding and you know, pairing teams in different ways. But yeah, the idea of the best against the best is quite a controversial one in that sense. Like there's research that will suggest that it's, you know, streaming your teams A, B and C isn't necessarily the best way to go either. That if you put even a stronger player in with a lesser group of players, well, then they could be more creative and work on different things. So giving people almost like a tool belt of experiences is better. But yeah, dropout is really important, particularly at that level, trying to keep those late maturers. The development versus the win focus and how we approach that will have an impact on dropout rates as well. You know, competition isn't necessarily, it's not a bad thing in itself, but it's how we interpret it and what it means at grassroots.
Yeah. Shane, I'm not expecting you to produce your PhD, but even just in your own observations, what have you seen when it comes to talent development and best kids against the best?
So to me, Joe, the challenge is how can you do that while at the same time making sure that the net is also cast as wide as possible. Mm. So can you create a best against the best, but can you create a layer two, a layer three underneath that for the late developers? Because there's no doubt there will be. I wrote a piece in Steer before last, now I think. I was actually after reading a lot of Laura's research. And I just found it really, really interesting. I was doing a weekly thing for the Times at the time, so I just had a dive. She was at the time, she was doing about the relative age effect. And when I had a look at the relative age effect in the League of Ireland, it was incredible. There was 250 players had played League of Ireland Premier Division football on a regular basis that season, and of the 250, five of them had been born in December. Mm. Which was crazy. Now the reason I say that is the December thing kind of tends to tie in with the late developers. The prime example being in the article, I had Lee Grace, Joe, as a footballer at Wexford in Galway. I mean, Lee Grace was Shamrock Rovers player of the year last year. He's been outstanding on European level and the whole lot. Lee Grace never made a representative team, his local Waterford representative team, until he was 18 years of age.
Yes.
Like, you know, there has to be an opportunity for those kinds of players still to step in late in the day. So I'm kind of contradicting myself, because I do believe in the best against the best, but how can we build tier two, tier three, that those players are, the coaching that they're getting is still really, really good. It's maybe slightly different style of coaching in that, I'd argue that with them at that level, it's really about encouragement and really telling them, well, no, you know, the decision as to whether you have a chance to be a professional footballer is not made because you're not in the elite at 12 or 13 years of age. But it is a challenge to get both sides of that.
So, Laura, the reality of what we're looking at here, I would suspect, around the country, is that still the best players, quote unquote, the most physically advanced and mature players, will get picked up for these national leagues at 13s or certainly 15s and 17s. And then the league races, born in December, as Shane talks about, will continue to play for their local team in their local league, which is the level two, I guess, as you put it. So are we well positioned as a country in what you found, Laura, to support the league races, born in December, playing for their local team, as well as the lads who are playing in the National League?
In a sense, perhaps not, because we're starting to use this language of elite with young kids now. And again, if they're not making that, well, then they'll gravitate towards something that does make them feel good and does give them an opportunity to play. So
could I just come in on that, for instance? So, like, I think a lot of people would have had the experience of not playing for elite football teams and loving their sport right the way through, and not playing for the representative teams, just playing for their local team and their local league and enjoying it and playing with their mates and continued right through their teenage years, on the understanding that Richie Ryan was up playing at Belvo. So why would that kind of be an issue, that there is an elite team? Because kids aren't fools either, and they kind of know what's what.
They do when that kind of psychological process kicks in and they can do it. I mean, up until that, as I said, it's kind of what they see around them in terms of selection. But not all kids will want to progress. And I think maybe that's what you're referring to as well. And that's fine. And that's why we have to have opportunities for everybody. But yeah, the late matures, if we look at, say, things like, you know, 5% of Irish under 17 players, research from Stephen Finn, played senior. So, you know, where are the other 95 essentially coming from, and how are we challenging and supporting the more physically mature player as well that has made that? And that's, it's often we think about supporting the late mature, but actually, can we challenge the early mature effectively so that they're not able to rely on that physicality?
Mm. And how do we do that?
Well, Joe,
I
can probably to my fault, talk anecdotally about that. I mean, there's no doubt when I look back at it, I feel very guilty. So in one of my Kilkenny underage sides, the one which Sean McGuire and Mikey Drennan would have come out of, our best player at the time was a guy called Mark Lyons. Now, I'm talking when he was 12 years of age, but he was your typical under 12 best player in that he was bigger than everybody else, he was more athletic than everybody else. We put him centre back because nobody could get past him, and he just defended all day and then booted the ball up the field when he took it off the other team inevitably. And we thought this was the best thing ever, and we were happy enough just to roll with that. Mark, aren't you a great fella, you're fantastic, you're brilliant, and blah blah blah. And you know, I would do it so differently a second time round. We really made such a little effort to focus on the softer skills that were going to bring that player along, because inevitably, other players, you know, within 3-4 years, he was no longer the biggest player in the team. He didn't continue to grow massively. And now all of a sudden, he was just another Joe Soap. I mean, we have to go after the softer skills and particularly the brain power, to my mind, the likes of your scanning and your decision making, all of that kind of thing, is so important for I see it at the moment with Evan Ferguson there, who's gone from Bohemians across to Brighton. I mean, what a fantastic player he looks. And you're looking at his physique and you're almost going, I really hope his physique isn't going to be a hindrance in that. I hope they don't just say, well, here's the big strong fella who's able to bully people. You really hope that all the rest of his game gets developed in the way that I failed to develop the rest of Mark's game, you know?
Yeah. Laura, was it possible to get a sense of coaching standards in this country by comparison with others?
No, it's not something that I've looked at anyway.
No problem. Shane, what's your sense on that front? How are we doing?
Yeah, I suppose the one thing I would say is I think, and again, I don't mean to argue against myself, but I think we need to get kids playing a lot of football a lot earlier. Laura, you'll remember his name better than me, the Belgian guy who was very, very good on all this. He presented in Ireland earlier this year, I think. When he showed that model, Chris, yes, was it?
Van der Hagen, yeah.
Chris Van der Hagen. He was brilliant. I thought his presentations were fantastic, Joe. The big thing out in Belgium is if you're 6 or 7, you can forget about playing 5v5. You can forget about playing 7v7. Everything is 1v1, maybe 2v2. And when you see it in action, it's brilliant. And it's a no-brainer. You're constantly on the ball. You're constantly getting so many touches. 1v1, you learn how to completely control a ball for the first year of your development. OK, now we'll take it to 2v2 when you learn how to factor in a teammate and decision-making as to when to take the man on yourself and when to pass. And they will literally organise these massive blitzes where it's like 20, 30 mini pitches all over this big playing area, and it's all 1v1 and 2v2. And I think that's fantastic. And I think I don't see much of that going on here at the moment. And I think that would... We're maybe at under 11, under 12. I think we're maybe trying to teach them, you know, C, D and E when they haven't ever really been taught A and B. And I think that A and B comes from trying to get them at 6 and 7 and doing that 1v1, 2v2 stuff.
Right. Would you go along with that, Laura? Is that what you'd like our 6, 7-year-olds to be doing?
Yeah, absolutely. And what I like about the real change that the Belgians undertook for a number of years, it was evidence-based. So they did a lot of research on things like touches, simple things like touches. Well, if we play these kids in 1v1, 2v2, how many touches are they getting versus a larger size game? And they've looked at that and they definitely see an issue with their late maturers. So they've started things like their futures squad, where essentially they run shadow underage national team squads for players that are less physically developed. They still, right, they receive the same coaching, that there's, you know, receive same opportunities in terms of playing. But you're just trying to stop that gap developing from access to early resources because of maturity.
Okay. Because, I mean, that is the great issue with the January kids versus the December kids, isn't it, Laura? As I understand it, and please do correct me, but they're bigger, so they start making the teams and the representative teams, so they're getting better coaching and they're getting more hours, and suddenly, before you know it, the gap is massive.
Yeah, absolutely. And what's interesting about it as well is that it's not just a physical difference, but it's also a social and cognitive difference as well. So say the early born kids are more likely to be captains and take on that level of responsibility and engagement with adults as well. If you look at the under 13 and under 15 squads across League of Ireland, well, they are stacked with the early born kids, the January, February, Marches. If there are later born kids, November and December, they're, you know, they might be those kind of standout talents, or they just happen to be early maturers that are born in at the end of the year as well. So there is a difference between the relative age effect and biological maturity. But yeah, absolutely. So it is about trying to really understand that in a development system and trying to overcome that a bit.
Okay. And is there any argument for splitting the age groups into 6.5s and 6 and 7 and 7.5s as opposed to every 12 months?
I could be wrong on this, but I think it's something that the GAA do at school age. But yeah, there's a lot of ways. There's no silver bullet. I mean, this is something that's been around in academia since the mid-80s, really. But it's about trying to get an appreciation of it at grassroots and seeing, well, you know, we really can't afford to essentially lose talent.
But again, Joe, just to give you a really practical example of that again, I'm not sure, Laura might know, I'm not sure is that future developers thing still been done in Ireland, but I can tell you that at 15 years of age, Sean Maguire went for Irish under 16 trials and wasn't selected. And I remember him coming back to the regional centre really, really disappointed and really, really disillusioned. And I'd say he'd probably back me up and I'd say he was pretty much on the verge of kind of packing it in, or certainly packing it in terms of taking it seriously. And his coach at the Regional Development Centre pulled him to one side and said, listen, just to let you know, there's a new thing going on, a future developer squad. It's for people who are, you know, quite small and slight like yourself. And you're after being selected to attend that. And they went off to play a game and it reinvigorated him big time. It really, really did. And there's a hell of a chance he was about to slip out of the net before that happened. So, I mean, to me, that's an absolute must. I don't know, you know, I don't know what way to do it based on height or weight or what month you're born. I don't care what way it's done. But if it means that the smaller, slighter player who isn't as physically developed is kept, you know, kept moving in the right direction and given that extra boost of confidence, it's an absolute no-brainer.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense.
It seems
sense,
to me that
yeah,
that finance kind of put paid to that. But there are things that we can do within existing structures to target that as well. Like, all it would take would be a little bit of flexibility in league structures that actually, you know, we can very easily see where someone is in terms of the percentage of adult height. You know, all it takes is their stats and their parents' stats. And even having a system where actually people can play up, people can play down across the league systems as well, I think would be really, really valuable.
Yeah, okay. That's an interesting point. I know you played football yourself, Laura, for young girls out there. I'm hoping the landscape is rapidly improving.
Yeah, it's changing, absolutely. I think James Scott got that position as coordinator recently, and is, I know the organisation are rolling out more emerging talent programmes and expanding the league structure as well. So hopefully the future is bright there.
Because Vera Powell was on, Shane, and she was making the point that she thinks certainly at an early age she wants young girls playing with young boys. You know, she says she can pretty much pick out which girls played with boys growing up on the streets as well, you know, like a Denise O'Sullivan. And she said that's absolutely fundamental to their development.
Yeah, I've been involved with Port Leash Soccer Club here in Leash as well over the last few years. And I suppose we're quite lucky in there in that the person who oversees the academy structure is a female, Sylvia. So I suppose she's got a particular, maybe she's extra conscious of that whole side of it. And the girls' soccer in football in Port Leash is fantastic. The girls are playing with their own age group the whole way up along. But they are also playing then with, they're allowed to play with the team 1 year, 1 year younger than them, let's say, in terms of playing with boys football. And
right.
I would be doing sessions, say, for the under 13 boys, let's say, in Port Leash. I'd come in and I'd be asked to do a session with them, and I'd do the session with them. And like, I really don't mean this in a patronizing way whatsoever, but twice, the two most recent sessions I took, the outstanding players on the pitch in terms of technique, okay, sometimes they were pushed off the ball and sometimes, you know, the physical thing might have got the better of them. But in terms of technique and decision making in both of those training sessions, the girls were the standout players, because I remember going back to Sylvia and saying it to her. So, you know, that's to my mind, that is brilliant to see.
Mm. Laura, clock is coming against us, as I knew it would. Like, there are a gazillion aspects of this we haven't even scratched the surface of. So is there anything in all the studying you've done over the last 6-7 years which has really jumped out at you as something that we are not doing in this country and we need to do, and as soon as possible, and why?
We could talk all day about, you know, contact hours, play opportunities, specialisation, all of that. But really, to me, it comes down to stakeholder relationships. We could have the most perfect, if such a thing exists, development plan on paper, but unless we have everybody singing from that same hymn sheet in terms of clarified roles and responsibilities and even better levels of communication across all bodies, that will have to play a part in this, because really we won't have that almost finishing school of the UK for this anymore. So to me, that would be the big takeaway.
Yeah, and say in a magical world everybody got along and there were hugs and high fives and lots of smiles and they could all agree, what would you like them to agree on? Anything that's not there now that you think, well, that's, you know, it's a no-brainer, we should be doing this, and it's for almost political reasons we're not doing it.
I think to agree on a philosophy, we can take a philosophy like that, as many as possible, as good as possible, for as long as possible, if we look at that's been put out there, and really try and drill into what that means. And that means, you know, individualized development, opportunities for boys to participate, you know, outreach, coaching by League of Ireland across that almost second level. Mm. There's lots of different things that we could do.
Yeah. Are our dropout rates out of kilter with countries, comparable countries to ourselves, or are they worse, better?
I think they're relatively comparable.
Yeah, okay. Shane, what jumps out to you? What would you like to change overnight?
Look, I do think there has been a huge amount of improvement. I really, really do. I think the standard of coaching in the country has gone up massively, which can only have benefits. I think you have to take into account, Joe, that we have one thing that nobody else in Europe has to battle with, and that's the GAA. There's no doubt that is a significant challenge. I mean, I know somebody was talking to me about a Cavan Monaghan minor final, I think the last year or the year before, where 25 of the players who were on the field had played intra-county soccer somewhere along the line. So that's a huge, huge behemoth. So it's just so, so vital that coaches... I think the one thing I'll say, just touching on what Laura says there, is I think the FAI, there's no doubt that almost the sole focus of the FAI for a long, long time was the senior international side. I think there is a change in emphasis now in terms of them focusing on League of Ireland a bit more, focusing on the underage side of things and all that. The only problem now, obviously, is they don't have the money to plough into it.
Yeah.
But it's a step in the right direction in that sense. But we've got a challenge, and we have to make soccer as appealing to as possible to kids to take on the challenge of GAA at underage levels. And by the way, both can absolutely coexist side by side. You know, you hear this crack of specialisation want to be pushed earlier and earlier and earlier, and if you still want to play at GAA, you may forget about it. I mean, we quite simply wouldn't have had Shane Long and that goal against Germany if he'd been forced to choose that at 14, Joe. I'm telling you now, he was choosing hurling. So we just need to be so careful with that.
Yeah, no, that's a no-brainer. Hell, you're coaching a hurling team now as well, I see. Congrats on that appointment.
Cheers.
Laura, because I was reading some of your excerpts from your PhD, your study in various places today, there's loads of fascinating bits in it, and you've done, you know, studies over years, keeping in touch with different players and how they're faring and what their experiences are. So it's a great piece of work for people to dive into. Is there anywhere easy someone can download it or read it or catch it in full?
Yeah, I've broken some of it down into blog kind of snippets at talentdevelopmentinirishfootball.com.
Okay.
And the full PhD can be found on my Twitter handle. So it's @Finnegan_Laura.
@Finnegan_Laura. Great. Okay, listen, yeah. I'm sure people will check that out and give it a read. Loads of texts in, which we'll get to in the next while. But Dr. Laura Finnegan from the Football Research Group at Waterford IT, Shane Keegan, part of the Dundalk setup these days. Many thanks to you both. Appreciate it.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power, fueling the mischief in the beautiful game. Gamble responsibly. See Dunlewy.net.
The OTB Podcast Network with Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural protein powered chicken bites.